The following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
From the Associated Press, I'm Megan Crane, and this is Ground Game, a podcast about politics from the ground up. Each week, we bring you a conversation with AP reporters who live in the communities they cover. This election cycle, one group of voters has drawn tons of attention from both sides, suburban women. Traditionally, married women in the suburbs were believed to be a solidly Republican voting bloc. But now, polls are showing college-educated women with higher incomes may be getting turned off by President Trump and some of his party's policies. The jury is out as to whether last week's battle over Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh will affect those votes. One race in which this constituency is key is the 10th District of Virginia, where Representative Barbara Comstock, a Republican, is facing a tough battle to keep her seat against State Senator Jennifer Wexton. We're joined today to talk about that race by Matthew Bearcat, who covers Northern Virginia for the AP, and national political reporter Juana Summers. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
First, for this week's local flavor, Matthew suggested showing the apple harvest near Winchester, Virginia, which is the rural part of the Virginia 10. And since Virginia is my home adopted state, I brought in some pictures of apple picking near Winchester so that you'll be able to find those on Instagram. And Matthew brought some pictures of something else that's very characteristic of the district, which is traffic. So we have some pictures that show the diversity of Virginia 10 in our on-the-ground coverage. You can find those on our Instagram. So down to politics. Matthew, can you start us off by telling us about Virginia 10? Can you describe the district for us?
Yeah, 10th District in Virginia. It's Northern Virginia, the suburbs of Washington, D.C., and it stretches from actually inside the Capitol Beltway. There's a sliver, some very wealthy precincts, McLean, Virginia, crosses the Beltway, and the heart of it is Loudoun County, an outer suburb, a fast-growing area of the greater D.C. area, and it does stretch all the way out west to Winchester, some more rural, conservative areas of the state.
And so what are some of the big issues in that area in this election cycle?
You know, because it's so close to the nation's capital, the local issues a lot of times are national issues. It's a district with a lot of federal workers, so they're very attuned to what's going on in the federal government and the federal budget. It does have a lot of issues that, you know, play out the way they do in a lot of other districts. Transportation is a big issue in the district. It's, lots and lots of traffic on the Beltway. The folks who are making those long commutes in from Loudoun County into the district care a lot about traffic. And Barbara Comstock especially has tried to make some hay out of that, you know, questions about tolls on some of the highways that have been imposed in the last couple of years. But, you know, national issues really are local issues, you know, so close to the nation's capital.
Sure. But, like, when you talk about the tolls, can you give us an example? Isn't there, what was the highest toll for the drive into the city?
Yeah. I-66 runs west to east inside the Beltway. And when they opened it up last year, for the first time, they opened up to solo drivers.
And it used to be HOV only, right?
Yeah. It used to be that if you were a solo driver, you could never use it. But they've changed that now. And if you're a solo driver and you pay the toll, you can use it. In the morning, those tolls have shot up to, at times, $46, $47. That's a little unusual for it. They've tried to pin that to Jennifer Wexton a little bit on some ads. They say, don't get Wextoned on tolls. It's not really... Jennifer Wexton's actually been opposed to those tolls. They're pointing to one sort of very narrow vote she took on a Transportation Commission meeting dealing with a lot of broader issues. But it's a sensitive issue. It's an important issue for the district. And, the way it's playing out in the ads, you can see that.
Sure. And what does campaigning look like in that part of Northern Virginia?
if you're watching your TV, you see it. It is, you know, they all do ground game. They're all knocking on doors and canvassing, but it's TV ads, and it's one of the most expensive media markets, the DC Metro market. They put ads on these stations that maybe 10% of the people that see them are actually 10th district voters, but it's the way you have to do it. So they spend millions and millions of dollars on TV ads. And that, frankly, is the main way that this gets played out and the main way voters are introduced to the candidates.
Let's listen to some sound from one of those ads. This is a Jennifer Wexton ad that seems to be pointing right to what we're talking about today, which is the suburban female voter.
I'm Jennifer Wexton, and as a prosecutor, I put criminals in prison during the day and change diapers at night. Later, when I had a law practice, I volunteered to help moms collect child support. Then, as state senator, I worked across party lines to target sexual offenders and take guns away from domestic abusers.
So it might be hard to tell from the just the sound alone, but that ad is not very subtle in its targeting of women. She is driving her minivan as her children grow up in that part of Northern Virginia over time. Juana, can you talk a little bit about what we're talking about when we talk about suburban women voters? Because it seems to be somewhat nebulous.
Sure. So when we're looking at the national landscape, I think that most political strategists on either side of the aisle would agree that the fight for control for the House of Representatives runs through all of these suburban battlegrounds. So districts like Virginia's 10th Congressional District. And when we talk about suburban women, we're mostly talking about college-educated white women who obviously played a decisive role in the 2016 election and are really one of the most coveted groups that both parties are trying to look at in these traditional battlegrounds. I think this district actually is really interesting because it is so reflective of what we see in these battleground races across the country as we look towards November's elections. You've got Jennifer Wexton is clearly working hard to make this race national among those voters and capitalize on President Trump's unpopularity in her district and using that to try to convince these educated suburban women that they need to elect her as a Democrat to be a check on the president rather than Congresswoman Barbara Comstock, who is trying to really make this about local issues. And I think something really interesting is you've seen her emphasize repeatedly that she is someone who has delivered for her district time and time again. She's done this delicate dance of trying to create some distance between herself and the president, who's not popular in this district. But it's really hard to make that distinction when your district is so close to Washington, so everything becomes nationalized really rapidly.
Sure. So let's back up just a little bit and talk about when you say these voters were key in 2016. Let's talk about the details of that for people who maybe don't follow it as closely as we do. So when you say those white suburban women were a key voting bloc for Donald Trump, what are you talking about there?
So what we saw in the 2016 election is a lot of white women who are moderates or independents. There's many of them broke and voted for Donald Trump as opposed to voting for Hillary Clinton. And if I recall correctly, and Matt might know a little bit better than me, I believe this is a district that Hillary Clinton carried by about 10 points in 2016. So I think that's going to make it really interesting to see what this demographic does this time around.
So I am personally fascinated by the idea of a swing voter because I don't know very many of them. And I think that we talk a lot about these blocks of voters, and I wonder if it isn't more different groups of people turning out. So can you talk about the dynamic in the suburbs? Like you were saying, this is a district where Barbara Comstock won. She's a Republican, but Hillary Clinton also won. So that must be split ticket voting.
Yeah, so this district's really interesting. It's a district where Republicans have held this congressional seat for more than three decades. But over time, this is a district that looks a lot different than it did three decades ago. It's an incredibly diverse district, as Matt mentioned. You have a lot of younger families moving into its incredibly affluent district. I think you see a lot of that change happening because of its proximity to Washington, D.C. Lots of people who commute in here to D.C. who were living there and working here. So I think that's really what's made the difference and why we've seen the electoral calculus change so rapidly. And I think that's why this is going to be one of the most hotly watched races this cycle, is because you do have someone who's an incumbent in this long-held Republican district, but it does look different. And again, Hillary Clinton carried it by 10 points in the governor's contest. Ralph Northam, who's a Democrat, beat Republican Ed Gillespie by about 12 points. So I think that is what makes this just kind of a really fascinating microcosm district.
Yeah.
And the heart of the district is Loudoun County. And it's very fast growing. A lot of people have moved in there recently. And the politics swing rapidly on the local level, the Board of Supervisors. They vote in all Republicans 4 years later. They vote out all Democrats. you're absolutely right that Hillary Clinton won it by 10 points, double digits in 2016. Mitt Romney won the county narrowly in 2012. And you see it through the last 15 years. Loudoun County flips and flops. And right now the trend is looking pretty strongly that it's going to be Democratic. That's how it's been going. But you have a lot of voters that really aren't moored to old political figures. There's no, certainly no political bosses in Loudoun County. It's a free-for-all.
So can you talk a little bit about Loudoun County and when we talk about it as an affluent area, what is the economy in Loudoun County? Is it all people commuting into the city or government workers? How is that an affluent part of the country?
There are a lot of well-paid government workers. That's part of it. There's also a big tech economy. The internet, sort of the backbone of the internet, they like to say, runs through Northern Virginia. And you get out in Loudoun County. Back in the old days, AOL was the king. AOL isn't king anymore, but there's still a lot of tech stuff going on. Dulles Airport sits right there, and not only a major airport, but an international airport. So that brings in a lot of business on its own. But tech, defense contractors, like I say, maybe not necessarily always government workers, but people who make their money off the government, and that, you know, sure. Defense contractors.
Contractors. And is the district diversifying also?
Yes. It's absolutely diversifying, and that's one thing that Barbara Comstock perhaps has been best at. She gets criticized a lot for not holding town hall meetings, not holding, you know, political meetings, and that may be a fair criticism, but one thing she absolutely does is she goes to Diwali festivals, ethnic festivals, and there's large different Asian population, Korean, Vietnamese, and she goes to all of them. And I have talked to voters who don't know much else about her, but they know that she shows up for those things, and that is something that's always worked to her benefit.
It's old school politicking.
Yes.
I'm Megan Crane, and this is Ground Game. We'll be right back. I'm Megan Crane, and this is Ground Game. We're talking about suburban women voters and a tight race for the U.S. House in Virginia. Juana, just ahead of Justice Kavanaugh's confirmation vote, you spoke with some women in the outer suburbs of Northern Virginia about that issue. What did you find?
Yeah, I spoke with quite a few women, and one of the things that I found really interesting was, first of all, as Matt and I both kind of alluded to, this is an affluent, highly educated district. These women were incredibly plugged in and incredibly passionate with very dissenting opinions on what happened. I spoke with one woman who was telling me that she was really frustrated that she felt like Judge Kavanaugh was a good man who'd been hung out to dry, and that she said it was unfair that a man was being held to the standards of today for something that happened years and years ago when he was a teenager. That, you know, you might not, this is a woman in her 60s, she said, you know, you might not remember things quite the same way as they actually happened, and she didn't think it was fair to ruin the judge's career over something that was ancient history, I think is how she put it.
Yeah, we actually have some sound from that conversation. Let's listen to her in her own words.
I remember when I was that age, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on, especially if there's alcohol involved. Her interpretation might be a lot different from what actually happened. You know, what if people were jumping on the bed and his hand went down on her mouth? I mean, you just don't know.
Did you find people feeling so passionately on the other side?
I did. I talked to a lot of people. I was out in the Leesburg area for a full day, and there were people who told me, you know, they were really upset about, I remember one woman in particular who was with her child, and she was just like, I don't know what message this sends to my daughter as she was watching this play out. And keep in mind, this would have been several weeks ahead of the most recent hearing. So before we heard from Dr. Ford recounting what she says happened between her and Brett Kavanaugh 35 years ago. But there was still a lot of very intense feelings, a lot of people saying it had motivated them to become more active in elections.
That's interesting. I'm also curious if there isn't a bit of a generational division there. I know I spoke to a Republican woman this morning who's a very partisan Republican who is seriously reconsidering some of her votes because of the Kavanaugh situation. So did you find some of that as well, that it was all different kinds of diversity among these women.
Absolutely. I think that there was a wide representation of beliefs, and there was some generational split. I found, just to generalizing maybe a little bit, but most of the women I talked to who were in their 50s, 60s, and 70s were much like the woman who we just heard from, were not as, I don't want to say that they didn't find the problem, the behavior that was alleged problematic, but I think that they perhaps were looking at it through a different lens and saying, you know, these are things that happened when I was younger. And I think that as a woman in my 30s myself, I think that for a lot of women who are younger, who are around my same age, we grew up with a little bit different of a view on these kinds of incidents. And obviously with the rise of the Me Too movement, I think it's just talked about a lot differently, even among just, you know, your own social group.
Yeah.
One small way that this district might be different than other districts across the country on this issue is that some of those inside the Beltway precincts in the 10th, those are the places where the people are sending their kids to Georgetown Prep.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're sending them to Landon and Bullis and Gonzaga, and it becomes a little bit more personal, I think, sometimes, because it hits so close to home, and that may sharpen those divisions that Juana's talking about. But it definitely changes it a little bit for some of those voters.
Sure. Juana, can you talk about some of the other races around the country where this same dynamic is playing out? These suburban women, these swing voters are really going to be the key.
Absolutely. I mean, there are so many races that have a very similar dynamic, ranging from right here in Virginia, North Carolina, Illinois, and California. One of the races I always think about that's really similar is the race for Kansas's 3rd congressional district. And that's a district currently represented by Congressman Kevin Yoder, who's a Republican, was seen as a bright star in the party when he first won election to that seat. He is receiving a challenge from Sharice Davids, who is a Democrat. And that's a race that the DNC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and a ton of outside groups have just been pouring money into to try to get to boost Davids in that race. It's right outside of Kansas City, which is where I grew up. And it's a very affluent district. Johnson County, Kansas looks a lot like Northern Virginia. Tons more diversity now than when I grew up there 20 years ago. But it looks a lot like, and I think that's another one that's very similar.
So these races where this dynamic is playing out, do they seem to be tilting toward the Democrats in general? Is that the dynamic that we're seeing among suburban women, or do we just don't know at this point?
You know, I think if I've learned anything after 2016, it's that I should never make predictions about anything. But I think that they're all battlegrounds. They're races where you see lots of money changing hands in terms of last-minute investments for advertising on TV and things like that. I think the parties are all really trying to contest these races really strongly. But I think in most of these suburban districts, it's just still too close to tell.
Sure. And does that dynamic then play out also like at the Senate, where you're talking about a statewide election? Or is it just the electorate becomes too diverse at that point?
I think we do see this some in statewide races, but I think that it's a lot easier to kind of track suburban women when we're looking district by district, because you're looking at kind of just smaller areas of the country, so that makes it a little easier.
Sure.
You know, the 10th district is such a sort of perfect crystallization of these trends that are running against Trump and running against Republicans, that there are a fair number of people who don't even consider it a battleground at this point. They consider Wexton to have a very sharp lead, even though she's running against an incumbent. And the Democratic, the House Majority PAC, pulled its ads, the Democrats pulled their portion of ad spending from that race, basically out of confidence that they don't need it and they can spend it somewhere else.
Wow, interesting.
So it is, like I say, it really is a perfect storm of the issues that I think have Republicans concerned.
That's interesting. You do learn a lot by following the money, that's for sure.
I was speaking to somebody. Democrats seem to feel very good about their position in this race, as we were talking about. We see that from the money. But the other thing that'll be interesting is right now, people on both sides of the aisle are really fired up about the Supreme Court confirmation fight. But memories are very short, and the election's not until November. So I'm really curious to see whether or not either Democrats or Republicans will be able to use that as a long-term strategy. Some outside groups are indicating that they plan to spend millions of dollars on ads in districts like this one across the country to remind people over the fight over Brett Kavanaugh. But it's just not clear to me whether or not that will actually make a difference in November.
Right. Well, that's interesting, because like your reporting found mixed bag as far as reaction among suburban women. So maybe that's a big gamble to assume that they're all outraged.
Absolutely. And I think we're going to see it from both parties. You know, I spoke to a number of Republican strategists in the hours ahead of the vote who said they actually think this helps their side of the aisle and that it will help galvanize right-leaning and Republican women who feel like Brett Kavanaugh didn't get a fair shake by, from Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee and nationally, and that his name was dragged through the mud. So they were actually telling me they feel like this fight will only help their side.
Yeah, it's interesting. Although I wonder if that month-long break doesn't take some of the air out of that balloon.
Absolutely. I'll be really curious to see. It's hard to know what drives people to the polls, but I'll be curious to see if there's any lasting impact here.
Yeah, well, we'll certainly be trying to find out.
Comstock and Kavanaugh, it is interesting. They go back 20 years, and they go back, actually, where they know each other is from investigating the Clintons. Kavanaugh was doing it for Ken Starr. Barbara Comstock was doing it for one of the House Oversight Committees. And when Kavanaugh was nominated in July, Comstock came out with a very positive statement. After the hearings with Christine Blasey Ford and Brett Kavanaugh, people were waiting to hear what Barbara Comstock would say. She had been a little reluctant to talk about it at all. She put out a sort of a lengthy statement that more than anything just sort of blasted Senate Democrats for the process. She blamed Democrats for turning it into a circus and was sort of silent on Kavanaugh himself, but a lot of people faulted her at that point for not being supportive of Christine Blasey Ford, not being a champion of women.
It's interesting. Another sign of what a small town Washington is. Thank you. We've been talking to Virginia correspondent Matthew Bearcat and national political reporter Juana Summers. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks.
It was fun.
I'm Megan Crane, and this is Ground Game. Our show is produced and edited in Washington by Kevin Vinays. Remember, you can see our pictures of Virginia 10, the diversity of that district, on our Instagram at AP Ground Game. You can reach us there as well. And on Twitter, same handle, at AP Ground Game, or by email, groundgame@ap.org. Lots of ways to reach us. We really do want to know what you think of our project. You can rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And we really do read all of the comments and reviews. So I want to tell the Rolling Ball 1271 on Reddit that I hope I didn't say on the ground too many times this week. Thanks for listening, and join us next time.